Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Should parents be held responsible for their children's actions if they're young offenders? Because up to 1,000 children have been identified as prolific offenders. The government is preparing to increase the number of juvenile diversion programmes in an effort to try and steer them away from crime. Take a listen to Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South Central, Seamus McGrath. He was speaking to Anton about this earlier this morning.
Parental responsibility has to enter the conversation in a more meaningful way. Ultimately, parents are responsible for children until they reach adulthood. Now, we fully understand that this is a complex issue. There are many causes to youth crime, to youth antisocial behaviour and so on. I think there is a spectrum here in terms of the parental approach. I think there are many parents out there trying their best, you know, and may have very difficult children with complex needs and so on like that, and unable to control them. And I think those parents need help and they need support. And I think that's what the government is looking at. But there is the other end of the spectrum where there are some parents out there willfully enabling their children to carry out crime. And in those cases, there has to be sanction on those parents and there has to be penalties.
John Lonergan is a former governor of Mountjoy Prison. John is with us here in Lunchtime Live this afternoon. Should parents be held responsible for their children if they're regarded as prolific offenders, John?
Now, I want to differentiate between children who, of parents who encourage them and facilitate them and involve them in criminality. That's a tiny number. I'd even say a tiny number of the 1,000 children that are highlighted as having criminal activity on a regular basis or being involved in criminal activity on a regular basis. And for those parents, absolutely, they must be held responsible and they mustn't be allowed to do that. But they're a tiny, tiny number in relation to the overall issue that we have in relation to parents and the responsibility. 99.9% of parents, Andrea, are responsible for their children and take it very seriously. I gave a long, long time working in the prison system and came across hundreds of parents who had their hair pulled out over the years with young boys, especially boys, who were difficult almost from 7 or 8 years onwards. They tried everything under the sun, failed to get help, and inevitably the child ended up in prison doing long sentences, often for very violent crimes. We have to take on board as well the Children's Act of 2001. And when it was passed 26 years ago, it stated that any child, a person under 18 years of age, shall be classified as a child. Now, you know, what can a parent do with a 17-year-old, 6'3" boy who refuses to cooperate with them, who refuses to carry out their instructions, who won't do what the parents instruct him? What can they actually do to ensure that he doesn't get involved in criminal activity, for example? And in my view, there's very little the parents can do. And just one other point that the politicians should address. The mother of one of the boys that were involved in that horrendous incident on the M9 a few weeks ago, she gave an interview to the Sunday Independent 2 weeks ago, and one of her claims she made was that in his last court appearance, she personally went into the court and begged the court to put him into custody because she said she was unable to control it. And the court was unable to do that because the resources were not available to the court to put him into custody.
And just even to leave, to leave that particular incident to one side for the moment, because there is so many other examples, John, as well, that we could talk about and reflect on here today as well. I think part of what the government's plans are to look at the number of juvenile diversion programmes that currently exist in the programme to try and enhance them and to roll them out more. So surely that tells us that the current system we have isn't working.
No, I think that's a very strong statement, Andrea. The current system isn't working.
We've 1,000 children, John, today regarded as repeat and prolific offenders.
Yeah, but Andrea, if the resources are not there to intervene at the moment, and by the way, the interventions often are needed way back the line, maybe at 7 or 8 or 9 years of age when a family is in crisis, and that often occurs. And when that help isn't available at that stage, the consequences are that the child is deteriorates over a period of time and then gets involved in serious activity. When somebody says the system isn't working, if the resources are not there, for instance, in the diversion programs at the moment, and we say there's 500 children wait to be put on a diversion program, but there's no diversion program available to them, what do you think is happening in the meantime? The meantime is that they are now at very high risk, and there's no interventions, no support, and it's almost inevitable that their behaviour will continue to deteriorate. So resources are a very, very important element to it, particularly for the courts, that they have the options of doing something. At the moment, the courts, their hands are tied. They know they can't put them into custody for remand them even in custody for a period of time. And one of the points I make, and I've made it for many, many years, the one thing we must stop doing is taking away responsibility and accountability from young people and handing it over to their parents. The one thing I would say is that any young boy, and they're mainly boys, any young boy that's actively involved in dangerous activity and criminal activity, he must be held accountable and suffer the consequences. And that's a big part of it. And given the responsibility of handing it over to parents is, again, alleviating the individual. I go to to schools quite a lot, and that's one of the subjects I talk with 15, 16 and 17-year-olds. Who is responsible for your behaviour? And almost inevitably, Andrea, the young lads say, oh, my parents. And I say, so you went to a shop this evening on your way home and you rob it. Your parents are actually responsible for your behaviour. And I say to them very bluntly, you are personally responsible for your behaviour and you must be held to account. And that's what I would be advocating, that those young people who misbehave are held accountable and suffer the consequences.
And under the youth diversion projects that we currently have in this country at the moment, and John, you know this system better than the rest of us, in your view, do we have enough youth diversion projects to try and address this list of numbers we're talking about today?
We most certainly don't. And we don't have adequate resources in many areas. There's many interventions that are urgently needed by families and individuals in relation to speech therapy, psychological help, psychiatric help. There's a whole lot many of those young people are involved in drugs as well. We must never forget that as well. At 14 and 15 years of age, many of them are involved in drugs and the consequences of that. They've dropped out of school or they're not attending school, even though the legal age to attend school is 16. Many of them are not. So there's lots of interventions, including juvenile diversion schemes and Garda diversion schemes. There's so many different things. But at the end of the day, Andrea, it's a voluntary thing. Their attendance is voluntary in that sense. And if they don't attend, this is where the real crunch comes. If there's not a stick at the end of the day, all the carrots in the world won't work unless you have a stick at the end of the day. And the stick is, if you don't attend a diversion program, if you don't attend the program that you have ascribed to, well, then you pay the consequences. And I'm afraid, and I feel very sad to have to say this, I believe that the only real stick at the end of the day for those really at the very top of the spectrum is some form of detention. They have to be taken out of circulation, because running into court and running out the next 10 minutes later with a smirk on their face, knowing that nothing has happened.
Just
really.
When you say that, all right, there's a text in here from Kevin who says his own home was broken into. The culprit was caught. He'd 68 other previous convictions, and the kids are actually laughing at the guards. He says he feels that the court system is broken when it comes to trying to deal with young offenders. John, will you stay with us for a moment, because I just want to bring in Robert Cullen is on the line as well, and Robert is a criminologist with lived experience of the prison system. Should parents be held responsible for their children's actions? And we're talking about those, I suppose, well, that have been labelled and described, Robert, as prolific youth offenders.
So I'm triggered here from what John said. So just let me clarify a few things. So John's talking about like this stick approach, and so we need to understand that these young lads who are offending, they're predominantly coming from particular areas with particular experiences. Like, so we think about undiagnosed neurodiversity. Like, so if people come from a home or a community that is well resourced, they will have these issues dealt with appropriately. And then when we don't have the resources, they end up getting engaged in behaviour that becomes problematic. So what happens, and we have to understand then that, so when you were saying about the system not working, the system is very much not working, right? So the fact that John was talking about that we have 500 children waiting to go into youth diversion programs, that should signal that there's a problem, that there's something going on in these communities, within these families, that needs to be addressed.
So what's the best way to do that? Because if we have 92 youth diversion programs right across the country at the moment, costing about $450,000 per project, and we don't have enough, and I think everybody seems to accept that, how should we deal with this, Robert?
So we need to address the housing issues. We need to address people living in poverty. We need to address, give access to neurodiversity diagnosis, address them in children's mental health services. That's how you address it. Now, just like on the topic of parents being held accountable, right? So there was a report in 2019 that showed that over 40% of children in youth detention were in the care of the state before they went into custody. Now, if politicians are so adamant that parents should be held responsible, the state, are the legal guardians of them children. So are they going to own that? Are those politicians going to take on the responsibility for the damage that the care system has? If we look at the evidence, children that grew up in care are completely overrepresented within the prison system. And then we think about female imprisonment, and we know that the majority of women in prison are serving short sentences. And the children of women that go to prison often end up in care, right? So now we have children that are going to care, and then they're ending up in Overstown. So you can't disentangle this one from the other. And we also know that imprisoning children is the best way to ensure that someone goes on to become a repeat offender. So prison is known to be criminogenic, meaning it increases people's chances of committing more crime.
Is that your experience? Can I just because John obviously has a lot of experience as a governor of Mount Joy. I mean, in your experience, John, have you encountered that?
I certainly met people who went into prison or into detention at a young age and continued on for most of their 20s and into their 30s. And we have some research, not a huge amount, but we have some research to show that, you know, about 50% of children who leave detention or care even at 18 years of age are likely to commit criminal offences. But I suppose, Andrea, all that sort of stuff is very, very important and very significant.
Yeah.
And it needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
But the butt bit is, in the meantime, you cannot allow young people, irrespective of their backgrounds, and I don't care really what their backgrounds are, some of their behaviour is just totally unacceptable. And they show no respect for themselves, and they show no respect for other people. And I'm afraid that in some individual instances, the ultimate sanction is to prohibit them and to stop them
Robert makes a case, though, about, I mean, you know, when you look at backgrounds and where people are growing up and access to services and all of that is a fair point, but where you have somebody that has committed multiple crimes and at the upper end and prolific offenders that we're talking about today, John, your case is that there's an argument to be made for people being detained, not just through the...
Well, there's an argument being made, the argument I'm really making, Andrea, is that when they continue to reoffend and the courts intervene and give them all sorts of different chances and they ignore all and disregard all those chances and opportunities they're given, there must be an ultimate sanction, because otherwise all the stuff in the world, unless they cooperate and connect to services, the services can do nothing unless the young boy connects to that service.
Suzanne,
and I'm afraid in a small number of cases, there's no connection. And in that case, I say, well, then there must be another step.
Suzanne Rogers is a research and policy analyst with Social Justice Ireland. Suzanne, what's your view on this? Like, how does that threat of detention, how does that impact society?
I suppose just to go back to the very point that John made at the very beginning, which is that when you look, as he said, to differentiate out the children whose parents are actively involving them in criminal activity, that is trafficking, that is exploitation of young people. There's already legislation in place to deal with that if it were to be looked at through those lenses. And I mean, you know, Robert has spoken very eloquently before about choices and this idea that these young people are making choices. Yes, they are, but they are making choices within a very limited pool of choices, and their choices can be between doing two bad things. One is worse than the other. So it is about the wider system that, as John has said and Robert has said, these young boys are growing up in. What opportunities are available to them? What choices do they see as being available to them? What sort of life do they think that they are able to lead? And so it is definitely a conversation about housing, about socioeconomic status, about all of those things. Mm. And they've both said that it's particular areas, it's particular pockets where this is a big, big problem. It is definitely a big issue.
Like, we currently have, Suzanne, legislation, you know, in place that can impose fines on parents. But from what I can see today, it seems to be sort of rarely used. The government is now looking at the parents of some of these prolific offenders perhaps being forced to engage with counselling services. Like, is that a good thing? Should we put, or how do you put that responsibility on the parents?
It goes back to, again, John's point and Robert's point. These interventions need to be put in place way, way, way earlier. So when you look, I mean, if we were to profile, if we were to say, actually, OK, statistics show that these are particular pockets, these are particular areas where the young boys in these areas are going to be more at risk. Let's put the resources in. We're talking about youth diversion projects all of the time. But what about the other supports? What about just general youth work? What about third spaces? When we walk through a park and we see 7 15-year-old boys hanging around a bench, we see that as antisocial behaviour. It's actually social behaviour. It's young people want to be out of the house. They want to be with their peers. They want to be hanging around. Where can they go? There's really very few places you can go that don't ask you to part with money. There's very few places you can even sit anymore and just hang around a park bench. You know, like, we need to really be looking at what is there for young people who maybe, you know, aren't interested in college, aren't interested in sports, aren't interested in the arts. They just want to be out of their house. Maybe their house is a difficult place to be. Where can they go? So this is about, I think, general youth work, third spaces, places where young people can go, where it isn't quite a diversion program. It's beyond that. It's before all of that. Put all of those supports in.
Yeah. Well, if you're trying to get people to engage when you're at the point of, you know, referring them to youth diversion programs, you could probably make the argument that at that stage, it's not going to say it's too late, but it's definitely quite late if that's when the first intervention is happening. Dean is with us on the line, Suzanne. Let me bring Dean in for a moment, because Dean, you've you're recovering from addiction, Dean, is that right?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Yeah. And this idea today that, you know, that we should have more juvenile diversion projects, that perhaps parents of prolific offenders should be basically forced to engage in counselling services, really holding parents accountable for their children's actions. How do you feel about that?
I feel we need to stop using parents as a convenient scapegoat, you know, for what's fundamentally a failure of state infrastructure. You know, the antisocial behaviour doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens in the exact geographic pockets where the government has stripped away all these services that the communities really need. You know, it's very sad to see. You know, there is change being made in the last 20 years, but it's not enough. You know, they're trying to throw it back on parents and back on the communities when it's the government that have forgot about the communities. You know, it's very difficult growing up in certain areas, you know, like I did myself. And you know, or we send them to prison, send them to jail. Going into Mount Joy is like college for people. You know, they're sending them into the jungle and they're coming out with these new friends connected to crime and stuff. There's not many people that will go into Mount Joy and come out and say, do you know what, I want to change your life around now, because they're treated like scum in there. You know, you're from a certain area. Growing up, we couldn't put our area on our CVs going looking for jobs. You know, we had to change our address so that we could have a chance of getting a job. You know, the areas are just left. You know, they put us into the areas and give us all these promises, and then they don't do none of it.
So it's very difficult, Dean, to try and find, you say, a pathway out of this. And I know there's plenty.
Very, yeah.
And John, I'm sure John is still with us, and I'm sure John can attest to the, you know, the services that are there within the prison system, and you know, the educational services that are on offer. But despite that, it's still very difficult, Dean, you feel, to try and change paths.
Yeah. Listen, I suppose prisons, you know, another debate about prisons and how ineffective they are. And for the last 20, 30 years with overcrowding, the amount of resources that are available and the alternatives that can be offered to people who end up in prison are very limited as well, and sometimes non-existent. And prison at the moment is in firefighting crisis on an ongoing basis, and it's doing nothing but, warehousing people, really, in the sense that there's nothing positive happening at all and very few interventions. And when they leave prison, their options are almost nil in terms of, have they an option or an alternative? As one of your contributors said already, what options have they? And I'm afraid the reality is very few options, only to return to where they were. So the whole thing is very, very difficult and very complex. And I suppose my final contribution would be that the easy option is to blame parents and to make parents responsible, excluding the small number of parents who encourage their children into criminality. Yeah. But my experience was that the vast number of the parents who visited their children in Mountjoy during my time, they were anything but supportive of their children's criminal behaviour. But they took their parents' responsibility very seriously. They loved their children. They were there to visit them and to be there, but they certainly weren't openly encouraging them to be into criminality. Actually, they were doing the opposite, but they could do nothing about it. And we need to accept that sometimes parents, irrespective of their efforts, are just not able to do, because the child who is 16 or 17 or 18, at that stage, the child is just not listening.
We can, you know, there's so many of you more qualified than I or many of the listeners to share an experience on this today. The one observation I would make, though, is that the amount of times you pick up any local newspaper from counties across the country and you read the local court cases, and all you see, story after story, case after case, is, you know, X, Y and Z referred to the youth diversion programme, and this has happened on multiple occasions. And you would have to question how successful the project is if somebody has been referred to it on a number of times and they're still out, like our listener Kevin told us in a text earlier, committing 68, you know, previous offences. There's something, would it seem, that not for every person, but there's something not working in the system if that's the case. This listener's got in touch to tell us, I think it's really important that we also look at the criminal justice system itself and what it can do for young people. In the UK, rehabilitation and diversion programmes for young offenders are much more embedded within the justice system. When I was in court with my own son, this listener says that they told the judge that what this young person needed was actually, it was more help. And the judge acknowledged that, but said the courts in Ireland could only deal with the criminality in front of them. That has always stayed with me. If we know a young person needs intervention, support and rehabilitation, surely the justice system should have mechanisms to address that alongside the offence itself, rather than only dealing with the particular criminal offence. Where are the youth clubs, the adults involved needed to assist these children and teenagers? Point been made by one texter today. Email if you want to share your own story with us, lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. We're going to come back to this a little bit later in the programme today. For the moment, though, John Lonergan, former Governor of Mountjoy Prison, Robert Cullen there, criminologist, Susan Rogers, Research and Policy Analyst with Social Justice Ireland, and Dean, thanks a million for sharing your own experience with us.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.